Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. We'd like to welcome Sirius Satellite Radio listeners, Channel 146. It is so good to be back on Sirius Satellite Radio. It has been too long, Truth Seekers, but we are back, ready to seriously kick ass and take names. Also, a warm welcome to KSAC in Sacramento and KPTK, well, you try saying it, in Seattle. We're back there, too, just in time to depress the hell out of you for the holidays. We are very glad to be back on these stations, and the list is going to grow and grow and grow here now that Nova M Radio has all the equipment in order and with satellite uplinks are happening. So welcome to those stations and the Sirius Radio group or network or function. It's good to be back on Sirius and the Earthbound stations too. Thank you very much. The new listeners, we have a new phone number, so join the fun and frivolity anytime you like if you're listening to the program live. And let's see if you are. It is 908 in the east right now, and 608 in the west. Kathy says, "Well, duh." Anyway, if you are listening live, the number is 800-989-1480. At any point that you'd like to jump in and join us, please do so. 800-989-1480. The rift within the White House, or I should say the House of Bush, is growing wider almost as fast as the violence in Iraq is increasing. Bush talks about surging more troops, doubling down. Where does he get this language? Now, wait a minute. We're only 9 minutes in the program. Don't go nuts here, Malloy. Doubling down. All right. The tough-talking Texan from Kennebunkport, that be in Maine, says the weekly attacks have not exceeded 1,000. The weekly attacks what, Kathy? Talk to me. Go ahead. What should it say? The weekly attacks. Anyway, the Bush crime family is trying to make it sound as though the attacks against the Iraqis by Iraqis is not as bad as it sounds. You know, as Pickles Bush said the other night, nobody ever reports the good news. The weekly attacks now exceed 1,000, and the death toll is doubling in that sad, beat-to-hell nation. And Chucklenut still wants to surge. Surge with what? We're running out of troops, as Powell and leading military experts are saying, there is no place to get a surge. I'm so old, I remember when the only time you talked about surging was on your mom's Singer sewing machine. And Colin Powell has become one of the most outspoken critics of this failed, disgusting, contemptible, criminal, impeachable administration. He had some choice things to say about the disaster in Iraq on Face the Nation yesterday, like what's 160,000 troops going to do that 140,000 can't do. And we need to know what the mission is before we keep throwing bodies into the stack like so many logs on a fire. That's not exactly how he put it, but we'll play his comments for you tonight. Of course, it's easy for him to say now. It was Powell's trumped-up evidence and phony vials of non-existent neurotoxins and visions of sarin gas and mushroom clouds at the UN Security Council that helped get us into this bloody mess and helped end a nation. So you can take Powell's comments for whatever it's worth. And just in time for Christmas, we have some sound from Tony Snow, or as we affectionately call him here, Foxy the Snowman. Now that Rummy's gone, seems Foxy is taking his place as the know-nothing in the Bush crime family. Ask him anything. He'll answer. Well, he'll never answer. He has more ways not to answer a question than any person I've ever heard. Looks like that chip that Rupert Murdoch has inserted in all the Fox anchors' brainstems works no matter how far you travel from the main transmitter. It's scary. Plus, Tony Snow had some interesting things to say about hate. So we're going to play that for you tonight and take your phone calls and do all kinds of good things. Before we really get into the swim of it here, I've got to pause in my incessant attack on the Bushes and the Cheneys. I really think these people are murderers, they're killers, they're evil. But they've done something good. The Bushes and Cheneys have done something remarkably good, so remarkably good that I've got to comment on it. You know, they say even a stopped clock is right twice a day. But what the Bushes and Cheneys have done, I think, deserves applause. I think that America should respond with millions of emails to the White House. Phone calls, certainly. Now, it's a given that the emails are not read by Bush or Cheney when they come in. But you know, some low-level staffer will read them. I think the website at the or the email address at the White House should be overwhelmed with emails of gratitude, and I think phone calls should be made, just an unending barrage of congratulatory and thank you, and I'm serious, phone calls, because what the Bushes and the Cheneys have done is they have given gay people in this country a wonderful and amazing Christmas gift, and they should be thanked. And kind of a side benefit with this gift that the nation's two top political families have given America. They have also, with the gift, told the religious right to go screw itself. The Cheneys and the Bushes' absolute acceptance and joy of Mary Cheney's pregnancy and the union of Mary Cheney with Heather finally validates the legitimacy of same-sex partnerships and the normalcy of a child having two mommies or two daddies. Who'd have thunk it would come from the Bushes and the Cheneys? My God! They did it! So the two families, I mean, Bush came out towards the end of last week, or over the weekend, and he said he just thought it was wonderful that Mary Cheney was pregnant. And Pickles says the same thing. And Darth Cheney and that old bitch he's married to, they said the same thing. They're all happy. They're happy. And they should be. This is Christmas. This is the birth of the baby Jesus. This is Mary Cheney's pregnant. Thank you, God. Another life. Another birth. Another precious little fetus. And it will be born, and it will be healthy, and it will be happy. And the two mommies will provide all the love and affection and joy and caring and tenderness that any two parents would provide. Of course, in the state of Virginia, where the happy, expectant couple lives, there's no telling how this child will be seen by the state. Well, there is a way. Look at the laws on the books in the state of Virginia. This child will be forever a bastard! An illegitimate little bastard! And the two women who love this child are nothing but a couple of goddamn whores! Living in sin! Filthy! 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 So I think we should send... Is this too strong for the new stations that have just... I'm sorry. I don't mean to get so violent here at the beginning of the program.
So, kiddies on the West Coast listening to Mike Malloy for the first time, don't take it seriously. He's just a jolly old elf having some Christmas fun.
We've said before, this is not a children's program. It's astonishing, isn't it? The Cheneys and the Bushes are just so happy, and they should be. But they should be happy for every woman who gets pregnant in this country. Whether she's gay or straight doesn't matter! And every person in this family, or in this country, yeah, we used to be a family, every person in this country, gay or not gay, who wants to have a child should be encouraged and loved and supported for doing it. But the Bushes and the Cheneys have spent their entire political careers condemning, damning gay folk who get together and have a child or want to live a normal life as a couple. And they have done it for the most blatantly political reasons, to jerk around these half-witted Christian evangelicals who went for it every time. Oh, yeah, well, the Bushes and the Cheneys hate the dykes, so I can too! Well, guess what, morons? The Bushes and the Cheneys have blessed this union. The Bushes and the Cheneys have blessed this baby. And that's a good thing. Now, to the Christian evangelicals, what are you going to do? Not reelect him next time?
Well, we've got great hearts and great compassion about our fellow human men and women.
Twenty-two past the hour. So anyway, I really do think there should be thousands of emails and phone calls, hundreds of thousands, to the White House thanking the Bush crime family for the one decent thing they've done in 6 years, for making this astonishing effort at ending once and for all the ugly prejudice Republicans have encouraged and promoted against people who happen to be gay. You know, Mary Cheney's pregnancy is truly a blessed event. And the way the Cheneys and Bushes are reacting is the way most people, most normal people, would react when a couple gets pregnant. And that is with support and love and kindness and joy. But, of course, that's not what they've been saying. What they've been saying is that it's awful and it's ugly and, you know, Heather has two mommies. It just so happens that Mary's partner is named Heather. How's that for irony? But you right-wing evangelicals, you so-called fake Christians, choke on it. Just choke on it. You know, I'm driving around town now, and every time I see, and you still see them, especially here in Georgia, especially here in the Atlanta area, the Bush-Cheney bumper stickers, I just want to pull up next to these people, pull up next to them at a light and say, you know, I agree with you. Aren't you glad that the Bushes and the Cheneys now finally support gay unions and gay folks having babies? Aren't you happy with that? That's an issue that just drives me nuts.
Well, it's no different from their hypocrisy on everything else. It's okay if some member of their family is gay and has a baby. It's okay for other families to go die in wars, just not their own.
Yeah. But this whole gay issue, the fact that it is an issue is just, by these filthy Republicans, it's just, every time I think of the term log cabin Republican, I just want to grab the person and just shake them till their teeth rattle and say, what the hell's wrong with you? Jose Padilla is so mentally damaged as a result of 3 years and 8 months in a naval brig in South Carolina, thanks to the Bush crime family. 2 years of which, at least, he spent in total, complete solitary confinement, finally transferred from military custody to civilian legal system earlier this year. His mind is gone. His lawyers say he's been unable to assist in his own defense, and that mental health experts have been unable to help him or to help them deal with him. His federal public defender in Miami says, quote, Jose's experience as a detainee was so traumatic that it's physically and mentally painful for him to answer the questions that we put to him. He just shuts down. In order to build his defense, we have to cover a lot of the same area as his interrogators, and he can't relive it. The government itself, the Bush filthy putrid crime family, cited the affidavit of a psychiatrist for the defense, Dr. Angela Hegarty, who said that Mr. Padilla did not understand the nature and consequences of the proceedings against him, and that he suffered from, quote, an impairment in reasoning as a result of post-traumatic stress disorder complicated by the effects of prolonged isolation, end quote. So they drove him nuts. They drove him crazy. How many people at Guantanamo are being driven crazy? Who was it that said the other day, the worst of the worst are being kept at Guantanamo, and yet another 38 were released, most of whom went back to their home countries where they were immediately released. There are some sick sons of bitches running the military prison system thanks to George W. Bush. But Padilla, an American citizen, accused of conspiring to manufacture a dirty bomb, a nuclear bomb. A gang member from Chicago, driven insane. How many Russian novels have been written about this in the past 100 years? Huh? What happened in the Soviet Union in the 30s, in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, when you railed against the state? You were declared insane and sent to an asylum. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people?
There's nothing left standing, nothing moving, nothing to say. They drove the prisoners east to the boats for their hanging from the gallows overlooking Guantanamo Bay. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat.
For a Pience, Friant's future, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. Let's do some phone calls. Jim is calling from Carlisle, PA. Jim, welcome to the program.
Mike, I want to take this opportunity to welcome you back to the satellite radio. This is one old truck driver. Sure missed you while he was off the air there.
Well, Jim, I'm glad to be back, pal.
I tell you, when I first started listening to you, I thought, man, this guy is really over the top. But you know what? Everything you said and everything you've ever called the Bush crime family, man, you hit the nail on the head. So you've been exactly right. And, you know, keep up the good work. And, man, people like you and your show is why that the Democrats have got control of Congress now.
Well, let's see if the Democrats can do something good with that control, because we can take them out as well as put them in, right, Jim?
Hey, if you don't do your job, you're fired, right?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, that works for most of us. It should work for these politicians, too.
Anyway, man, it's great to hear you back on the radio.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. Take care.
Right.
Drive safe.
All right, bye now.
All right. We used to have a huge contingent of over-the-road truck drivers who, this goes all the way back to the mid-80s when I was on WSB, which was a huge 50,000-watt blowtorch of a station here in Georgia, and then on WLS in Chicago, another huge 50,000-watt station. And it's good to be back on Sirius for a number of reasons, but for that one, too, because now we can get back with some of the guys and the gals who would listen to us all the way across the country, the stories, and they're not apocryphal. People who, driving truck who would call me in Arkansas, and by the time I got to the call, they'd be in Iowa. You put me on hold, Mike. I was just outside Little Rock. Now I'm approaching Sioux City. Oh, well, I'm sorry. good to hear you again, Jim. Dave is calling from Portland, Oregon. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Good to hear you tonight. I'm calling about how a lot of these radio stations lately have been just talking about the Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, all these, these corporate Democrats that are running for president in 08. And nobody's talking about Dennis Kucinich, who he's got the only plan to get out of there in 90 days, a five-point plan to, accompany a cutoff of funds, which nobody wants to cut off. Hillary wants to give him more money. And all our listeners, we just have to go to Kucinich.us, Kucinich, and get behind this guy. He's a guy that sounds like he wants to bring peace to the world. And I believe him.
Yeah, every time I listen to Kucinich, I feel like, God, if this guy had a chance.
And he says they're not going to put him on the air.
No, they're not.
We got to not worry. We got to just back him anyway. Everybody's got to back him in the can.
Well, I agree. Real politic being what
it
is.
I mean, not to tell people who to vote for, but this guy is the only one that's.
Well,
all
of us have an opinion. Tell people who to vote for, Dave, directly or indirectly. But I'll tell you. Kucinich is a decent.
He's one of us.
He's educated. He's working class. He understands domestic and foreign policy. If there were justice in this country, we would not be talking about an upstart 2 years in his seat freshman senator from Illinois. We would be talking about a man that's been in politics since he was voted on the Cleveland City Council or the mayor's office 30 years ago, or 35 or 40 years ago. And a man who has an understanding, that would be Kucinich, who believes in this country, who believes in justice. But no, we're going to waste our time talking about Barack Obama, who, when he grows up, will probably be a wonderful candidate for something. I've got nothing against Barack Obama, but the way media has focused on him, the way media has focused on Hillary, while at the same time, everybody in media hates her. You know they do. Every report on Hillary Clinton has an element of snideness in it. Every report on Hillary Clinton has just an overlay of a kind of smarmy sarcasm. So here we go. They're turning it into a horse race already. Who's it going to be? Step right up. Hiya, hiya. Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton? What you say? And the debate is already going. Is it easier to vote in a woman or a man who's black? Well, he's not really black. I don't know. Hell, his middle name is Hussein. How's that? That's what it's gotten down to, and it makes me sick, and I agree with you. I hope the American public will take control of our political process again, but don't hold your breath, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Dave, I appreciate it.
Appreciate all you do.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you checking in. The Barack Obama thing, I think they're trying to, they, being media, are trying to do what they are so good at, overexpose somebody to the point where they no longer have any value whatsoever. They've already done this to Hillary, and I'll tell you, if Hillary Clinton does decide to run, and I think she will, we're going to see the kind of politics in this country that has made everything up to this point look like, I don't know, tiddlywinks. Because the right wing in this country, they are gnashing their lips, their teeth. They are sitting in the darkness, zipping and unzipping their flies, getting ready for this one. They are just the right-wingers, the neocons, these bloody, filthy, evangelical, fake Christians. They are just hoping that Hillary Clinton announces. so they can begin this bloody assault on her. As far as Barack Obama, bad news for Obama. I heard his wife is on the board of Walmart currently, not years ago like Hillary, and Obama recently spoke out against Walmart's anti-labor practices, which means he's in favor of Walmart's labor. Now, what does that mean, Kathy? Double negatives always confuse me. I guess it makes him sound like a hypocrite. His wife's on the board, and he speaks out against Walmart's anti-labor practices. Okay. Yeah, if there were justice, if there was decency in American politics, if any of us beyond the usual gang of those of us who still believe this country can rise to some level of competency, much less justice and dignity, but here we all are again with Dennis Kucinich talking about how he's the best candidate, would be make an excellent president, but doesn't have an Ice Cube's chance in hell for a number of reasons. If it were based on competency and decency and fairness and justice and intelligence and doing things right, sure it would be Kucinich, but it's not. It's based on celebrity. It's based on controversy. It's based on where do the cameras go? Nancy's calling from Chicago. Nancy, welcome to the program. Hey, Nancy.
Hi.
Are you there?
Hi.
There you are. Hi.
I'll tell you, I started watching you when you were on WLS, and WLS does not deserve such a wonderful man as you.
Well, it's very
and,
kind.
And I wanted to ask a comment. Tony Snow had arrogantly made a comment today about Gates going to Iraq to kick the tires. Now, we feel this is nothing but a crass and insensitive marginalizing of a tragic situation, and we would love to hear your comments about that. And thank you so much, and we love you, and keep saying keep saying everything that we feel.
All right, thanks, Nancy. Appreciate you checking in. Do we have that soundbite where he's talking about kicking the tires? We got plenty on this evil bastard. As far as kicking the tires, if he's honest, he would say Gates needs to go there to kick the corpses. But of course, Gates will never step outside the green zone. He doesn't dare. If he were to come out the green zone, fully protected by the U.S. military to the extent that it's possible to protect any part of Iraq, he would be murdered immediately. He would be chopped into a million pieces. His arms and legs and head and torso and feet and hands and fingers and eyeballs and hair would all wind up in different packages mailed back to U.S. embassies around the world. That's how much they hate us. So as far as going over to kick the tires, Tony Snow's comment like that, again, I maintain that Tony Snow and Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and the rest of these people should be suited up the same way the average U.S. Marine or infantryman is suited up, given the same equipment, and dropped into the middle of downtown Baghdad or Fallujah or Al-Anbar province and just said, okay, make your way. Oops, shot already. Before I could even say make your way home. But you and I know that won't happen. They call it kicking the tires. They call it you go to war with the army you have, not the army you wish you had. They call it a 2,000 dead is one of those numbers that, you know, we're not interested in numbers. We're interested in bringing freedom and democracy to Iraq. We're interested in stopping the greatest threat to world peace since Adolf Hitler. We're interested in ending his nuclear program and his weapons of mass destruction like chemical and sarin gas, and he's going to come and get us. Ooh, kicking the tires. That's real nice, Tony.
I want to build more bombs than I can fit. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your skies. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Mike Malloy Show, you are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Ten before the hour. All right, before I'm inundated with emails here, Obama's wife does not and never has sit on the board of Walmart. According to the Chicago Business, I believe it's Chicago Business, Cranes, Chicago Business. Now, I got the story from CNN today. I should have known better, from a guest on CNN. Barack Obama, it says here, made national headlines last month when he loudly enlisted in the campaign to get Walmart stores to treat its workers better. Blah, 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 blah. This raises a question, not about corporate values, but about Mr. Obama's values. Specifically, while Mr. Obama bashes Walmart, why does his wife, Michelle, make $45,000 a year serving on the board of a Chicago area company that pays its executives a very hefty amount of money while laying off mostly minority workers in an economically deprived area, a company whose number one customer is, you guessed it, Walmart. And then it goes on to explain, and it's not a long article, but it's too long to do on the program. So you can go to chicagobusiness.com. And just search their site for Obama. This is the December 11th issue last week. So, my bad. She does not sit on the board. She sits... Oh, never mind. Go check it out yourself. What the hell do I look like? A research? You expect me to have facts on this program? Well, no. We always try to have facts on the program. We really do. Gary is calling from New York. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Doing fine.
I love the show. Used to be able to get it in New York.
Wasn't that nice back in the day before Air America decided to tank and get crazy? And
oh, my God. You know, it's funny because it was the flagship station. It used to be on 1600 or 1900 or whatever it was, whatever the station was.
WLIB, yeah.
Yeah, and then what happened is that, you know, they moved, and now I can barely get it. I live out on Long Island, you know, so now I can barely get it. You know, I've got to turn my radio a funny angle to get the thing.
Well, get serious. Get serious satellite radio. We're on Sirius now.
Well, you know what I do is I get you off the internet.
Well, that's one way, but doesn't that kind of tie to the internet? You got to have Sirius. Come on, you can afford it.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna.
You live on Long Island. If you live on Long Island, you can afford Sirius. You can get a nice receiver for under $100. Come on.
Well, you know what's funny is I listen to you, and I was telling this to my wife because I was painting one of my son's rooms today, and I was telling my wife because I was downloading some of your previous shows. It's all my life. It's like listening to my inner voice, you know, hearing you on the radio. But I have a question for you, and I know you say you don't have answers, but I would like your opinion.
Okay.
How do you think we're going to get back to the way America was before these monsters? Because, you know, maybe it was a slow progression up to the point that Bush got elected, what we were heading in this direction. But, man, it seems like we took some major jumps in the wrong direction now.
Yeah, if what you're talking about is getting back America's reputation and getting back on track toward justice and equality and decency in this country, because God knows we weren't there. If you're talking about getting back on track to try to disengage militarily from all these countries where we have our army to make sure that corporate America can operate without any problem from the local, you know, Democrats or the local environmentalists. If you're talking about that, I don't know if we can get back. So many members in the Democratic Party in the leadership positions, in the first place, by saying they're not going to impeach, and I keep flip-flopping on this, by saying they're not going to impeach because they want to move America forward. What really pisses me off about that is the Constitution doesn't say here is grounds for impeachment unless Nancy Pelosi says otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Here is what you should do when you have a chief executive who commits high crimes and misdemeanors, no matter what Senator Reid says.
Yeah,
that's not what the Constitution says. It says when your chief executive, when your president, your vice president, or any of these other executive people do this, here's what you have to do.
Yeah.
So the Democrats have already said they're not going to do it. So I don't know. I don't see good stuff coming. I wish I did, Gary.
Mike, you know what's frightening though is Bush and his crime family have done all of these things without precedent. Okay, and now they've set these precedents.
Well,
it's going
right.
to make it easier for somebody to do it in the future, unless we set a precedent and say enough and impeach the son of a bitch.
To give you as coherent an answer as I can, it'll take some time. I doubt if I'll be alive to see it happen. You may. It's going to take a generation or more, just like getting over a bad relationship. It takes time. There's going to be an uphill battle here to heal our reputation around the world, and it depends on a lot of variables, whether or not the dollar is still used to trade oil, what's going to happen with fossil fuels, what's going to happen in the Middle East. I just get nervous, I really do, about Democrats. I'm sure the election of Democrats stopped this rush to fascism. But I just hope the Democrats can rise to the occasion and try to undo the damage that's been done. It's like if you put a floor in your bathroom, you put nice tiles down and you get it all done and you look at it and go, oh, my God, it's out of plumb. It's not level. And you have to rip it up and start all over again until you get. You've been there, done that?
Oh, yes. Can I ask
too.
You one more question?
Sure.
And again, I just want your opinion on this. You know, I used to wonder where the Nazis got people to do the dirty work of working at, like, concentration camps
right.
and things like that. And going on the Internet and seeing people on YouTube and some of these right-wing blogs with these flying monkeys, I no longer wonder that anymore because there's a bunch of raging lunatics out there that would willingly do these things, I feel
oh,
now.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God,
and,
yeah.
And they're all Republicans. Now, where does this come from? When you know, I saw this one guy on like YouTube. He lives in a one-bedroom apartment. He probably doesn't have a job. He babbles about how great Bush is, and all these people that aren't doing a damn thing for anything that they're doing.
Gary, I have no idea where these people come. Whether it's here, Russia, China, Nazi Germany, the Cuba, I don't know, but they're there. Hey, pal, I got to go. Thanks for checking in. Come back, okay?
You got it, bro.
All right, take care. We'll be back after the break, y'all. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 7 past the hour, almost. And again, we'd like to welcome our Sirius 146 Sirius Left listeners. We are back at you after a 3-4 month hiatus here. Also, KSAC in Sacramento and KPTK in Seattle. Glad to be back on those two stations also. There are several more that I think are joining this week, joining the lineup of Nova M radio stations, certainly where it concerns this program, and possibly a couple more. So anyway, thanks a lot to the affiliates who came back after that nastiness that occurred with Air America, which is not over yet. You can get more information about that in today's New York Times in the business section if you want to, although I don't know why you would. We have some sound for you now, a couple from Tony Snow, or as we call him, Foxy the Snowman. This guy is turning out to be just a creepoid of the highest order. I don't know, maybe it's the meds he's on, I have no idea, but with just days left in 2006. Let's see if Tony Snow has recovered any of his memory or if he's still suffering from this Orwellian amnesia. What does Tony Snow know? Well, let's find out. Reporter wants to know about Bush's plans, if any, for Iraq. The reporter says, given that the holidays are upon us, has the president set some deadlines for some of this reporting back? Assuming maybe some of the people plan to be off. I mean, are we on top of deadlines for him to get these questions?
There is not a hard deadline because the thing you have to look for is to get the answers right and to have the work done thoroughly. And trust me, when the president calls up and says, I need this as quickly as possible, people tend to move as quickly as they possibly can. So it's all hands on deck. But there are no hard and fast deadlines.
Is he in receipt of everything he wanted and just reviewing it now?
That I don't know. I mean, he's been in receipt of a lot of stuff, but I do not know the status of some of the things he's asked for.
Any decisions whatsoever on his new policy?
I'm just not going to get into the process of whether he's made decisions or what ones those are going to be. I will apologize again, as I will do many times between now and the time he gives the speech, but I'm not in a position to shed a great deal of light on internal deliberations other than in very general terms. I'm not going to be winnowing out options for you.
Not in a position? Not in a position. Hey, Diphthong, you're the press secretary. Who is in a position? Makes you wonder why they even bother holding these press conferences at all. Again, I've been saying this for 4 years. Why doesn't the White House press corps just once say, screw it, none of us are showing up today? Nothing to say. Don't know. Not going to get into. Nothing to share with the American people who are financing the war and sacrificing their loved ones for this bastard and suffering the damages and coming home with their minds shot away and their legs gone. Nope, nothing to say, but we'll go over there and kick the tires. Evil. Sons of bitches. You want a definition of evil? And Hannah Arendt was right. The banality of evil. Tony Snow. Rush Limbaugh. Sean Hannity. Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, the banality of evil. These are common, sub-mental people. Sub-mental? In the vernacular. This brave reporter asked the obvious question, which you shouldn't do in Washington, about why on earth Bush is waiting to announce his new strategy in Iraq, since conditions in Iraq haven't changed. So what is, as a matter of fact, well, they have changed. They're getting worse and worse. So what's he waiting for? Divine inspiration? Another message from God? Another dream sequence where, I don't know, maybe a dwarf person will come out and hand him a golden apple and say, bend down, I have word from God. Is that what he's waiting for? Reporter says, we're probably at least a week and a half, if not 2 weeks at the earliest, before the president can give the new way forward speech. We're 4 years into this, Tony. You've had the new government since February in Iraq, the new leadership. I'm asking a fair question. I hear that come out of a lot of Americans' mouths, which is, wait a minute, the pieces of this puzzle really haven't changed for many weeks, if not months, if not years. We have this major course correction coming, but that was announced several weeks ago. What's the holdup?
Well, no, again, if you take a look, I don't think he was, because I got the transcript here, as you can tell. It doesn't look like it was that definitive. What he's saying is that there are a whole series of things you need to look at.
No, that's the wrong one. Let's get the right one here. We got the wrong one. We want to make as much sense out of this program as we possibly can. All right, you ready? Okay, well that was missing. Here's what Tony Snow said. The holdup is that when you're taking a fresh look, I've tried to make the point that this is very complex and that you try to do it right. I think the American people understand that a commander-in-chief takes seriously his obligations to get things right. Why start now? This is not like solving a crossword puzzle. What? It, in fact, is a highly complex situation where you are talking about the dispositions of tens of thousands of troops already in the country, and you're dealing with international coalitions and a whole series of other considerations, so there is no hold-up, other than the practicality of getting it right. And the president is, well, when he feels comfortable that his questions and concerns have been addressed, and he is tasking people with answering some tough questions, then he will announce the way forward, so it's not a hold-up! You know, that sounds like a fair term to use, does it? A hold-up? And since you've got no answer, Tony, other than more tired, empty statements, I'm going to go with the reporter and the rest of the American people on this, which is to sit here and say, what's the hold-up, you snaky bastard? People are dying. People are being blown to pieces while your boy is trying to play Spider-Man on his Game Boy. Really, really hard work and stuff, right? Huh? Getting ready for Christmas? Are you, Tony? Going to go kick the tires? All right, let's move on to the next reporter. Next reporter asked about Colin Powell's assertions on Face the Nation yesterday, that this ridiculous surge idea is not going to work any better than any of the other insane plans. The reporter says, Tony, does it concern the White House that Secretary Powell went further than Secretary Gates in saying not only is the U.S. not winning, but in fact, Secretary Powell said the U.S. is losing. He said he agreed with the Army Chief of Staff from last week that the Army may be close to being broken. He also said that he would like to see a drawdown starting by mid-2007. That would seem counter to...
Well, no, again, if you take a look, I don't think he was, because I got the transcript here, as you can tell. It doesn't look like it was that definitive. What he's saying is that there are a whole series of things you need to look at. He talked about resource issues. He talked about issues of mission and so on. So, again, rather than, you know, we respect Colin Powell, and it's important that he play a part in the debate. But at this point, the president will continue to look at all the information at his disposal and all the analysis and make his own determination about the best way forward. And I can guarantee you that a lot of these considerations and concerns have been raised before. I mean, we're aware of many of those issues. And, you know, let's just wait until the president announces the way forward.
What did he just say? Do you have any idea what he just said? He says he took a look at Powell's transcript, and it doesn't look like it was that definitive. It seems definitive to me. Tony Snow says, well, what he's saying is there are a whole series of things you need to look at. He talked about resource issues. He talked about the issues of mission. Yeah, he did. But what he said was there isn't any. And Snow says, you know, Bush is going to listen, look at all the information at his disposal, all the analysis. Oh, yeah, you know that's going to happen. And then Tony says, and make his own determination about the best way forward. Okay, so if Bush isn't listening to Powell or his pappy's ISG report or any expert advice, then is he just listening to God? Going to take the advice of the big booming voice in his head? This is scary stuff.
Here's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Here's the last one from Tony Snow today. And we want to leave you with this back and forth with Helen Thomas. Now, as always, these cheesy press secretaries who have no respect for a woman in her 80s, especially when she is a ass-kicking, progressive, liberal, fair and balanced news reporter who doesn't like to hear sass from these punks who, you know, were still nursing at their mama's teats when Helen Thomas got her first job as a reporter. But she puts up with it. White House spokesman always talk over her and try to belittle her and try to patronize her. So, you know, Tony Snow is no different from the previous two jackasses. But the question Helen comes up with, and then there's a couple once we get the soundbite going here, but she starts out by saying, and I want you to listen as Tony Snow, who is delusional beyond belief, tells Helen that the reason the insurgents are fighting in Iraq is because they're infused with hate. Well, I guess that would make sense against people who invaded their country and who raped their children and burned their families alive. Jesus, God. Anyway, the way he says it is not that they're full of hate as a reaction to what the United States has done to this country since 1991. Oh, no, 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 no. They're infused with hate because the little brown Muslim bastards live on hate. They have hate flowing through their veins, unlike good Christians, unlike good Jews, unlike good Hindus. No, no, no. These are Muslims. They are saturated with hate, Tony Snow says. This is incredible. Helen says, has the president factored in any? She says, has the president factored in any idea of how many people will die with this surge? You don't think our occupation is a factor?
The holdup is that when you're taking a fresh look,
Okay, let's get the one that we need here. So again, Helen Thomas says, has the president factored in how many people will die?
I think the biggest factor right now, if you take a look at what's going on, who are they killing? They're killing Iraqis, aren't they? They are primarily killing Iraqis, and what they're trying to do is to destroy hope and peace and democracy.
How do you know all that? I mean, why do you think people would want to do that? In the first place, they don't like an occupation.
Could it be that they're suffused with hatred?
There it is.
Could it be that people, in fact, who are in unoccupied lands, who have been slaughtering, also do so because they hate people? The question is...
Are we killing any of them?
Yes, we are.
Oh, my God. Helen Thomas says, how do you know all that? I mean, why do you think people would want to do that? In the first place, Helen Thomas says, they don't like an occupation. And Tony Snow answers, could it be they're suffused with hatred? Could it be that people, in fact, who are in unoccupied lands, somewhere other than Palestine or Iraq, unoccupied lands, do so because they hate people? Oh, my God. And Helen Thomas says, well, do we hate them? Are we killing any of them? And Tony Snow says, yes, we are. Jesus Christ. Muhammad. Moses. The Buddha. Shiva. I mean, somebody call in the name of one of these phony-ass fake deities. Okay, somebody? Astonishing. Save that soundbite forever. Could it be they're suffused with hatred? That's why the slaughter is going on in the Middle East. Well, of course. They don't have blood running through their veins. These are Muslims. They're suffused with hatred. Only Tony Snow, little rat bastard that he is, presents it as a question. Could it be they're suffused with hatred? That's why we're killing them. They're hateful little bastards. They're like cockroaches. We have to exterminate them. Plus, they're like cockroaches who have all the oil. So we got to kill them. They're suffused with hatred. And our caller from New York said, you know, how long is it going to take to before America gets our reputation back, or before we get this turned around, you know, get back to where we were headed? I don't know. I don't know if we ever can. The Bush crime family may have taken this nation beyond a point of no return.
People who hate, you know what they hate? They hate the idea that somebody can go buy a home.
Oh, God. All right, very quickly here, because I want to get to your phone calls also. Last week, the Senator McCain said that up to 30,000 extra U.S. troops must be sent to Iraq to quell spiraling sectarian violence. And the Bush crime family is sending that also. But the General Peter Schoonmaker told a Washington commission examining options for the reserve forces that the U.S. Army will break, his words, will break unless it gets thousands more combat troops. That means fresh people off the street and all the training that goes into to getting them ready to go into combat and then sending them to combat. What Schoonmaker wants is combat troops. Schoonmaker. What he wants are combat troops. 30,000 more troops who have been through hell, who can go into Iraq and go through more hell. And those troops don't exist. They don't exist. General Schoonmaker said he wanted the army to grow by more than the 30,000 extra troops already authorized, but warned it would take time and money. Only 6,000 to 7,000 soldiers can be added each year. And every increase of 10,000 troops will cost around $1.2 billion. It's incredible what has happened here. I mentioned this last week. Republicans like to talk about how, well, the Democrats don't fund the military. No. The Republicans fund the military-industrial complex and tell the military to go to hell. And this time, they've done it. They have broken. The Republican Party has destroyed, essentially destroyed, the United States military. If we wonder why all these little tinhorn-ass dictators around the planet are challenging U.S. hegemony and rule, which after all is what we're after, right? All we have to do is take a look at how the Republican Party has destroyed the United States military to find our answer. Now, I'm being half sarcastic and facetious by saying that, because the U.S. military has a presence in something like, what was it I read, 120 different countries? Is that possible? Caesar didn't do that. Alexander the Great didn't do that. Genghis Khan didn't do that. Hitler, yeah, no. But here we are. And I'm not laying all that on Bush. Bush is a pig and a killer and a dumbass. But it's not just Bush that has put the United States military in 100 and some different countries around the planet. It's been a series of presidents since the end of World War II, and they never look, we still have a military garrison in Japan, in Germany, all sorts in Germany. Dear God! Which raises the question, why? To keep the Nazis from resurging? Oh, please. So General Shoemaker says it's broken. We don't have it anymore. And this is what the Republicans have done. Are you aware of this, Truth Seeker? Do you know that the Russian army, if it invaded the United States now, could probably take over the country? The Israeli army could probably take over the country. Who else? Certainly the Chinese. Oh, I know, we could fall back on our nukes. But I'm saying, everything being equal, no nukes, just military forces. The Republicans have turned this country into a sitting duck. Now, I don't mean to come across like some warmongering, paranoid, let's build up the military, because I believe in the total dissolution of the military. I do, except for the maybe 300 people needed to man the nuclear silos. That's all we need. What do we need the military for anymore? We have utter, absolute destruction that can, the entire planet can be annihilated in 45 minutes through the operations of 300 index fingers. The only reason we have this military is to satisfy this voracious beast that Eisenhower warned us against. But I digress. Shoemaker says the military is broken. This dumb bastard, brain-dead, psychopathic, PTSD freak McCain wants more bodies. If anybody should know about the futility of war, shouldn't it be him? So it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. If they try to make it happen, there is going to be a mutiny among the armed services in this country. And I think that's what this Bush bastard is pushing for. So Colin Powell goes on Face the Nation on Sunday with Bob Schieffer. Schieffer starts by asking him this question about Iraq. Schieffer says, Mr. Secretary, let's get right down to it. A lot of people are talking about and assessing the situation in Iraq. We just had the James Baker Lee Hamilton Commission to say, quote, the situation was dire and getting worse, unquote. What is your assessment?
I agree with the assessment of Mr. Baker and Mr. Hamilton. It's grave and deteriorating. And as Secretary Designate of Defense Bob Gates said at his confirmation hearing, we're not winning. So if it's grave and deteriorating and we're not winning, we are losing. We haven't lost. And this is the time now to start to put in place the kinds of strategies that will turn this situation around.
And what might those be, Mr. Secretary of Lies? Hey, Mr. Secretary of Lies, sitting there in the United Nations Security Council 3.5 years ago, spouting out your bull, huh? Those weapons of mass destruction, those missile launchers full of anthrax, where are they? Oh, that's right, hiding behind palm trees. So, Powell lays out the problem in this Q&A with Schieffer. There's no clear mission, not enough troops. Schieffer says, well, let's talk about where we go from here, Mr. Secretary. The president is apparently considering options. There seems to be stories leaking out now that perhaps he's talking about something like John McCain has been proposing, and that is a temporary surge, putting more troops, 20, 30,000 troops into Baghdad. The Baker Commission, of course, took the opposite tack. They said we need to start drawing down, essentially. What do you think we ought to do?
Over this summer, the United States and Iraqi forces launched Operation Forward Together. Began in June, and then phase two began in August, with thousands of American troops going into Baghdad to try to stabilize the situation. They haven't stabilized the situation. So we have tried this surge of troops over the summer. I am not persuaded that another surge of troops into Baghdad for the purpose of suppressing this communitarian violence or civil war will work. But if somebody proposes that additional troops be sent, if I was still chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, my first question to whoever is proposing it is, what mission is it these troops are to accomplish? Is it to secure Baghdad? In which case, the American Army isn't large enough to secure Baghdad, and we should not use our troops as policemen. There needs to be a clear mission that these additional troops are going to be performing. So before I would add any additional troops or recommend it to a commander-in-chief, I'd want to make sure we have a clear understanding of what it is they're going for, how long they're going for. And let's be clear about something else, Bob, that gets a little confusing. There really are no additional troops. All we would be doing is keeping some of the troops who are there longer and escalating or accelerating the arrival of other troops.
So what is Bush thinking, Truth Seeker? He's going to surge in troops we don't have for a mission that's not defined to stop a war we cannot win. What could be more insane than that? Of course, if God is whispering in your ear, none of this matters. Colin Powell says, if the surge is to secure Baghdad, in which case the American army isn't large enough to secure Baghdad. Do you hear what Colin Powell is saying? If the mission is to secure Baghdad, the American army isn't large enough to secure Baghdad. That's a city of 6 million people. What are we going to do? How is this going to be accomplished? Who in the name of God are making the decisions in this degenerate, sick White House? And then he says, let's be clear about something else, Bob, that gets a little confusing. There are no additional troops. Really? Well, then what is Bush talking about? What is McCain talking about? What was Rumsfeld talking about? What is Gates talking about? What are these sick bastards talking about? Oh, my God. We have one more for you when we come back. And then to your phone calls.
And fight with the Allies. What could we say? We're only 25 years old. With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold. This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow old. Fighters for Texaco, fight.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, here's the last one with Colin Powell. Schieffer followed up on Paul's comments regarding lack of troops and why Bush's surge is a terrible idea. Schieffer says, well, let me just ask you about that, because do we have the troops? You seem to be suggesting that we don't.
What General Shoemaker said the other day before a committee looking at the Reserve and National Guard, that the active army is about broken. General Shoemaker is absolutely right. And all of my contacts within the Army suggest that the Army has a serious problem in the active force, and it's a problem that will spread into the Guard and Reserves. Backlog of equipment that is not being repaired. Soldiers, especially officers and non-commissioned officers, going on repetitive tours. So if you surge now, you're going to keep troops who have already been kept there long, even longer, and you're going to be bringing in troops from the United States who are going to be coming anyway, but perhaps a little bit later. And so that's how you surge. And that surge cannot be sustained. The current active army is not large enough, and the Marine Corps is not large enough for the kinds of missions they're being asked to perform. And we need to let both the Army and the Marine Corps grow in size, in my military judgment. And the Congress has a serious task ahead of it to make sure that the Army and the Marine Corps get the funds they need to sustain themselves and to sustain their equipment, their ammunition, everything else they need if they're going to be put in these kinds of situations.
I take it you think that 160,000 troops are not going to be any more successful than 140,000 have at this point.
Nobody has made the case to me that 100 and it's 140 now, but I have not seen a case that persuades me that it would be better at 150 and 160. And frankly, that would take a surge that you have to pay for later by not having troops that can come in and replace some of the 160,000.
That's an astonishing soundbite. It really is. In the first place, let's not kid ourselves. Colin Powell is a paid pet of the military-industrial complex. Colin Powell is a liar. He's either a liar or a total fool for his involvement in getting this nation into war. But he has a history of being an expert at cover-up, going all the way back to Vietnam, before he was a general, when he was, I believe he was a captain or a colonel or a major. And he successfully covered up the My Lai massacre for 2 or 3 years before a reporter broke the story. Colin Powell is a liar. Colin Powell is dishonest. And Colin Powell is a paid pet or whore, you take your choice of the words there, of the military-industrial complex in this country. And yet, Colin Powell is saying something here, isn't he? The Army has a serious problem in the active force, and it's a problem that was spread into the Guard and Reserves. Backlog of equipment that is not being repaired. Soldiers going on repetitive tours. This is the Bush crime family, folks. This is the Republican Party. They have broken the military! Jesus God! They've broken it. Now, the question, why? Why did they do it? Well, of course. Of course, outsource. Privatization. As Paul says here, the surge cannot be sustained. The current active army is not large enough. The Marine Corps is not large enough for the kinds of missions they're being asked to perform. And a draft, truth seekers, is not going to work. So what's the answer? You got it! You're way ahead of me! Private military! Just like we are privatizing the prison industrial complex in this country, we are privatizing the Food and Drug Administration, we are privatizing every single regulatory agency, now we are privatizing the military. That is the only solution. Does that make sense now, Truth Seeker? Do you get it? A couple of you got it. I'm sure thousands got it. Andre writes in, Powell's a war criminal. More combat-ready troops will be private mercenaries, more Bechtel, more Halliburton, sort of like at the end of the Roman Empire, when the Roman army was made up predominantly of foreign mercenaries and conquered peoples. Earl writes, 30,000 combat troops on the ground means 3-plus troops somewhere else to support them. Isn't that 90,000-plus? Do you say draft? Of course you need equipment. Doesn't that mean more funds for the military-industrial complex? You see how the evilness, you know, I talk a lot about evil, and I say bad words on the program. I say son of a bitch. I say goddamn. I say this. I say that. I come across like a real potty mouth. Do you understand my anger? Don't you feel the same way? You're not fixated on those three poor, miserable, lost mountain climbers, are you? God rest their souls. They're all dead. Jesus Christ, every time I turn on television for the past 10 days, mountain climbers, I'm so sorry for them, I really am, but when you tackle Mount Hood, you stare death in the face, and if you die, goodbye, you die doing what you wanted to do. Do you understand what's going on here? Do I get angry? Do I say bad words? Yes! Because of this. Look what they've done. Look what they've done. They have broken the military. And they've done it consciously and deliberately and with malice aforethought, because the ultimate plan is to privatize it.
Do you get it now? You understand where we are now? Go back to where we were. My caller from New York, how do we get it back? We don't. Your phone calls after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I want to go to your phone calls, but before we go here, just one last thing. An open letter to America's conservative Christians. This appeared at Rob Call's website, opednews.com. And I think it's very appropriate. I can think of no group in this country that has been more anti-American and anti-Christ than these so-called conservative Christians. I've been watching this now since the advent of Pat Robertson and the Christian Coalition and these evil, disgusting, right-wing neo-Nazi political forces that for some reason, people who consider themselves to be followers of the teachings of Christ, a pacifist like Gandhi, like Martin Luther King Jr., an utter pacifist, everything that I can read, unless I have read the Bible incorrectly. And yet, in the past 20, 25 years, we saw the rise of these hate-filled, vicious, murderous, isolationist, so-called Christians who have utterly and absolutely perverted the message of Jesus. When I rail against Christians on this program, that's who I'm referring to. Yes, I am an atheist. I don't believe in any sort of religious dogma. None of it. But I have respect for people who practice peaceful religions and live their lives accordingly, not from a patronizing point of view from my point of view, but if nothing else, envious that they can dedicate themselves so much to a peaceful religious or God-centered philosophy that is not murderous, that is not hate-filled, that is not exclusionary, that is not dominant, that is not hate the queers, I hate this group, hate that group. When I meet people like that, I envy them. I envy their peace of mind, because my mind is a rat's nest of turmoil. I envy their dedication. I'm dedicated, but not in that manner. So when I rail against Christians or Jews or Muslims who practice this evil, nasty, ugly, vicious form of religion, that's what I'm talking about. And not being Muslim and not being Jewish, but having been raised in the Christian tradition, having been saturated with Christian teachings all of my life as a child, I think I can speak with some sort of authority about Christianity, not Judaism or Islam or Hinduism or Buddhism, but certainly Christianity. And for that reason, the Christian conservatives just tear my mind and heart up to pieces with their lies and their slanders and their absolute desecration
of the teachings of the man Jesus. Ah! Here's the letter from yesterday, an open letter to American conservative Christians. And the writer is K.P.O. Minville. You guys have a lot of nerve. Many of you are acting as if there's nothing wrong, as if you've done nothing wrong. You have a lot of repenting to be doing. This Christmas season should be a fine time of reflection and introspection for you. Spend it thinking about real Christian values. This past election should have been a wake-up call for you. I was there in Washington, D.C. before the war. I was standing there with my sign that said, "Peace, not war," not even saying anything, when a self-described conservative Christian came up to me and started yelling or telling me in detail why I was going to hell because I opposed this war and that I should repent my heathenish liberal ways. I tried to explain to her that I am a Christian. I am an ordained reverend in a non-denominational church. She would hear none of it. The people are now starting to wake up and are realizing that this invasion and occupation of Iraq was a disastrous mistake. Not a blunder. Not an oops. It was horrific, disastrous, catastrophic, apocalyptic mistake of biblical proportions. A mistake that you openly supported. A mistake by a man that you overwhelmingly supported. All because of a narrow set of comparatively small wedge issues. Shame on you for lacking perspective. Shame on you for your incivility during that time. Mine was not an isolated incident, and you know it. So many people have lost their lives, their limbs, their homes, their loved ones, and worst of all, their hope because of this action that you supported. Because of a basic, general, pervasive ignorance among the American populace about Iraq, the culture, or the people living there, you had no idea what kind of powder keg it really was. Now that powder keg has exploded. Tribes of people who were thrown together less than a century ago by the British and labeled the nation Iraq have gone back to fighting each other like they did for 1,000 years before. And 150,000 of our soldiers, our citizens, and our children are standing around in the middle of that nation while it explodes. What the hell were you thinking? Who am I kidding? I know what you were thinking. You were scared after 9/11. You had your sense of security shattered and you realized that we can be attacked here in our soil. You realized that we Americans can be victims too. Unfortunately, you failed to realize that we can personally experience repercussions because of what our government does thousands of miles away. Distance and verbal disassociation from our government's actions are no longer enough to keep us safe. So what did you do when God challenged you? What did you do in the face of fear? How did you react when confronted by people who hate you? You sided with the Republicans based on a narrow set of wedge issues, and you enabled them to do everything they did, starting with the Patriot Act, including the invasion of Iraq, and right up to doing away with habeas corpus and posse comitatus. Do you feel any safer because of what we have done in Afghanistan and Iraq? Do you think Islamic fundamentalists hate us any less or are reduced in numbers? If you do, then you are, in the words of journalist Michael Ware, suffering from the luxury of distance. An example of how real Christians react when they are attacked is right here in America's heartland, right under your nose. Remember earlier this year, the Amish in Pennsylvania were attacked by an insane man who executed several of their children in cold blood. He put them on their knees and shot them from behind. How did the Amish react? Did they attack the outside world for its wickedness? Did they rightfully mention that this is not an uncommon experience for them and that earlier this same year they had several of their daughters fall victim to rape? Did they invade and occupy two countries? No. They immediately held a press conference and publicly forgave the man. Then when the money and gifts started pouring in from all over the world, their first action was to create a fund for the wife and children of the man who murdered their children. Pay special attention to that. For future reference, that is how a real Christian reacts when they are attacked. You all really need to reevaluate your principles. You need to reexamine what Christian values really are. Luke 6,
27 through 30. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you and pray for those who spitefully use you. To him who strikes you on the one cheek, offer the other also. And from him who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who asks of you. And from him who takes away your goods, do not ask them back. Well, we know where that Christianity exists, don't we? It might have existed someplace 2,000 years ago by a bunch of philosophers who, religious philosophers, who were trying to set up the coda for this new religion, but it's certainly gone in the crapper sense, hasn't it? Now it's militant Christian games that you can buy at Walmart, video games where you can kill people who won't convert. Most of whom are hateful brown people with, you know, foreign-sounding names. Good God.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Now it was long ago when it all began, back in Bethlehem, in a promised land. A single star appeared in the sky, and three kings saw, and they each asked why. Each asked why.
21 past the hour. Now, I've got to do this, and then your phone calls. Baker, Louisiana. And this could apply to anywhere along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. There are hundreds of children in the trailer camp that is run by FEMA and known as Renaissance Village, but they won't be having much of a Christmas. They're trapped here in a demoralizing, overcrowded environment with adults who are mostly broke, jobless, and at the end of their emotional tethers. Many of the kids aren't even going to school. Anita Gentris, who lost everything in the flood that followed Hurricane Katrina and is living in one of the 200-square-foot travel trailers with her 10-year-old daughter and 5-year-old son, says, quote, "This is a terrible environment for children. My daughter is having bad dreams. My son is a very angry child right now. He cries. He throws things. I'm desperately trying to find permanent housing." The television cameras are mostly gone now, and the many thousands of people from the Gulf Coast whose lives were wrecked by Katrina in the summer of 2005 have slipped from the national consciousness. But like the city of New Orleans itself, most of them have yet to recover. The enormity of the continuing tragedy is breathtaking. Thousands upon thousands of people are still suffering, and yet the way the poorest and most vulnerable victims have been treated so far by government officials at every level has been disgraceful. More than a third of the 1,200 people in this sprawling camp are children. Only about half of the school-age youngsters are even registered for school. Of those, roughly half actually go to school on any given day. The authorities can't account for the rest. A number of officials who asked not to be identified told me they are concerned that large numbers of children are remaining isolated at Renaissance Village, holed up in the trailers day in and day out, falling further and further behind educationally and deteriorating emotionally. Leah Baptiste, a caseworker from a local affiliate of Catholic Charities, said, quote, "These trailers are small. They were only meant for traveling, and you've got families with 3 and 4 children cooped up in there 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, with no privacy, no babysitter, no job, no money. There's a lot of help they need. Some people have learned to adapt, but a lot are depressed." The most critical needs for the trader camp population are housing and employment. Many of the adults at Renaissance Village were working before the storm, but have been unable to find work since. Even the lowest wage jobs in the Baton Rouge area are scarce, and without cars, in some cases without money even for bus fare, it's extremely difficult for Renaissance Village residents to get to them. Beyond that, many of the residents have severe personal problems. They're afraid, said a woman who works closely with the population and asked not to be identified. They're embarrassed by their situation. They're humiliated. They don't know what to do. Some can't read or write, so when the government drops off these bureaucratic forms for them to fill out, it's a waste of time. Nearly all of the residents are carrying scars from their initial ordeal. Many lost close relatives, and many came frighteningly close to dying themselves. Candace Victor was about to give birth immediately after the storm and needed a cesarean section. A stranger with a butcher knife offered to do it. Ms. Victor said this woman was going to sterilize the knife by pouring lighter fluid on it and setting it on fire. Wiser heads prevailed and the baby, a girl, was later successfully delivered. The big story in the immediate aftermath of Katrina was the way the government failed to rush to the aid of people who were obviously in desperate trouble. What we're witnessing now is an extended slow-motion replay of that initial failed response. Thousands of people remain in trouble. But instead of clinging to roofs and waving signs at TV cameras and helicopters flying overhead, they are suffering in silence out of the sight of most Americans. The government could have come up with a crash program to build housing and find or create jobs for the victims of Katrina. It could have ensured that all those hurt by the storm received whatever social services they needed, including mental health counseling and treatment. It could have begun to address the long festering problems of race and poverty. The government could have done so much. But it didn't. That's Bob Herbert's column from the New York Times today. We'll be back after the break. Then your phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Five damn days, five long days, and at the end of the fifth, he's walking in like, hey, chilling on his vacation, sitting patiently. Them black folks gotta hope, gotta wait and see if FEMA really comes through in an emergency. But nobody seems to have a sense of urgency. Now the mayor's been reduced to crying, and guess what said niggas been used to dying. He said, I know it looks bad, just have to wait. Forgetting folks were too broke to evacuate. Niggas starving and they dying of thirst. I bet he had to go and check the number. Refineries first, making a killing off the price of gas. He would have been up in Connecticut twice as fast. After all that we've been through, nothing's changed. You can call Red Cross, but the fact remains that George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people.
In the Gulf Coast country's interest that there be a stable Iran, Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, stable Iran that's capable of rejecting Iranian influence. Yeah, okay. It's 26 before the hour. A program note, we will be here tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, and then we're taking Friday off and Monday, Christmas Day off, and that's it. Thursday night will be our Christmas program that we do every year. Molly will sit in here with me. I don't know how it's going to work out. As I read to her the night before Christmas, we also have the reading of the story of the birth of Jesus from the book of Luke. Lots of Christmas music. We also do O Holy Nightmare again. We take a look at the mythologies of Christmas. Here in the Malloy household, we most ardently celebrate the druidic aspects of this festival, the lights, the fire, the candles, the tree, the holly, the mistletoe, you know, all of that druidic or Celtic, mostly druidic, I guess, aspect of it. Somewhere in the back of my mind is always the realization that the birth of the Christian Messiah was, in fact, an eventful story, even though, again, I maintain its mythology, which doesn't make it bad. It's just what's done in its name that makes it bad, in my opinion. But there was an interesting column, where did I read it, recently, about even an atheist can celebrate Christmas. As a matter of fact, I think some of the most ardent Christmas celebrators are atheists. I mean, we really get into it. It's a fun holiday if it's done right, I guess. I don't have the booklet on how you do it right. To me, again, I go back to the druidic roots of this holiday. It was to entice the sun to return, to stay cheerful when this long dark night took over the northern latitudes. And, of course, when the Roman Empire spread and the Christian faith spread, they adapted it and changed it. But I think the ancient elements of this holiday, the winter solstice, the revelry, I love it. I think it's great. Yes, ma'am.
Well, how you do it right. Heavy on the eggnog, light on the Jesus.
Oh, Kathy, you're going to burn in hell. I swear.
Hell?
All right, let's do some phone calls here. I appreciate everybody's patience. Let's start with Haven, who's called in from Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Haven.
Hey. I had another point, but, you know, you played that Tony Snow stuff. You know, when he first got into this job, you know, there was all of this this poignant moment with the yellow wristband, and he seemed so, you know, human and so compassionate and just, you know, a heck of a guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what is up with his, I guess we just saw what his actual humanity is.
Well, I think the beginning stuff, Haven, was an act. He is an arrogant, snotty, extreme right winger who loves to suck up to the seat, literally, of power. He's in a great position. He was a third rate anchor on a neo-Nazi network, and now he's a spokesman for the most evil administration in modern history. The guy's in heaven.
I was just wondering. I mean, you can't have this many people in one administration who don't have a conscience. I mean,
but you take a look at every one of these people individually, and you come to the exact opposite conclusion, Haven. None of them do. Tony Smoley's got a chip in his head, and it's controlled by the giant Fox News satellite. Like all the Fox News, anyone associated with Fox, when he tries to give a straight answer, an electrode fires in his prefrontal lobe, and instead he says, "I don't know." Evil bastards. They're evil, Haven. If evil can be identified in this couch potato anesthetized America, then the Bush administration, all of its members, all of its sycophants, all of its the singers of praise, these are evil people.
I'm telling you. But the reason I called was because, you know, there's all of this hubbub about these NBA players and the brawl that happened over the weekend.
That was disgusting.
That was disgusting. And I just wonder, you know, why are people, you know, people want to throw the book at them. And, you know, I think the book should be thrown at them because, you know, I like basketball. Mm-hmm. And what I saw was horrible. And, you know, and by the same token, I'm wondering why people, you know, when someone disgraces, for instance, the game of basketball, that's one thing. But, you know, you spent the night talking about how this administration has disgraced our military and really, mm-hmm. you know, like just disgraced our future. But, you know, that's okay. We can get over that. There's no need to impeach him. I mean, how much trouble can he cause over the next 2 years?
Well, there you
that's
go, Haven.
That's the way some people play that. And
Look, you know, people a lot smarter than me and probably smarter than you have pointed out that we are the most entertained and the least educated in terms of things we need to know.
Mm.
Collection of people ever assembled. And I agree with that. You know, television, I'm not talking about basketball. I don't follow professional sports anymore except championship games, and I only follow them just for the excitement. But I don't follow professional sports because, to me, it's just nothing but overpaid men
a number of whom are jacked up on some kind of performance-enhancing drug, and I just gave it up. I gave it up about 20 years ago, and I used to be a great basketball and football fan. But you know, we get our bloomers in a wad over a bunch of men getting into a fight on a basketball court, and as you point out, we sit back and say, well, you know, people being slaughtered in Iraq, no, it's not an impeachable offense. Haven, you're right. I have no answers, but I feel the same way you do. It's shocking. It's just shocking. Hey, listen, man, let me move on. Thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate it. Mina or Mena is calling from Nebraska. Is it Mina or Mena?
It's Mina, and I want to say welcome back, Mike.
Thank you, Mina.
You don't know how long and how we've waited for you and how we've missed you.
So you're listening on Sirius?
Yes.
Well, good for you.
And it was just when we heard that you were coming back, we jumped, we yelled, we screamed, we hugged each other. You made our day.
So did we. We jumped. Kathy and I jumped up and down when Sirius decided and Nova decided to work out a deal. You know, we jumped and hollered and hooted, too.
Well, I had given up. You know, every day I checked your website.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing over and over. And I thought, you know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So we're so happy to have you back. God bless you.
Well, thanks a lot, Mina.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. I appreciate it. I should have asked her about the name, Mina, because that ever since Bram Stoker's Dracula, the one that I love in the movie, who all's in that? Come on, you're the movie buff.
You're talking about Francis Ford Coppola's version?
Yes.
With Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman plays the part of Dragul.
And Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder.
And, well, Cary Elwes was in that.
Yeah.
Van Helsing was played by, oh my gosh, I can't remember. Come on. Are the lambs still crying, Clarice? Who is it? Oh no. I'm too young for a senior moment.
I'm infecting you. It'll come to you. Well, remember, was it Winona Ryder's character who was named Mina?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Mina Harker.
That was her name in the film.
Yeah, oh, Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves was her
husband. And
No, Keanu Reeves was the husband of the woman who became totally...
No.
No? Okay.
Uh-uh. No, trust me. He's the one that was sent over there.
That's right. Well, that's the first time I ever heard the name Mina. And when this caller just called her, I thought, God, I love that name. I just wonder, is it Romanian? Is it... because wasn't Dragul, wasn't that all set in... in Romania, the whole thing? Hmm? You're still hung up on not being able to think of the name of the guy in Silence of the Lambs, right?
This is driving me crazy. He's one of my favorite actors, the old British guy.
He's British.
No.
Come on, Nanny.
Oh, stop it. You can't think of it either.
Well, of course I can. I know exactly what it is. But
I'm
not going
to say. You're furiously Googling.
I'm not doing anything.
I go through
this all the time. This is what it feels like.
It starts with an H. This is terrible.
Back to the phone calls. Mary is calling from Mississippi. Mary, welcome to the program.
Oh, I am just so thrilled, and I didn't mind waiting because it's either the phone or the Internet, and this is a better connection.
Well, you need to get Sirius satellite radio, Mary. You can get a receiver for, what is it, under $100, right, Kathy? And then I think the subscription is only about $12 a month.
Okay, I'll just mention your name. They'll give me a discount.
They wouldn't even. We tried to get a discount. I was talking about it on the air. No discounts.
Oh,
we don't
boy.
Even get a discount.
They got to promote you better than that.
I hear you.
Anyway, I was calling because I used to follow you.
Uh-huh.
And you and I thank you for taking my call when you were at, you know, where, the dark time, I guess we call that.
Was it WLS or Air America?
The second. That's why I called it the dark time.
Oh, okay.
For you. But anyway, but turned out to be great. Make a long story short, I just found out this rumor about Bush buying 100,000 acres in Paraguay. You know about that?
Yeah, I heard about that. I read about it a couple of weeks ago, and I think that's where he's going to hide. I think Paraguay historically has provided a lot of haven for fascists who came,
who
fled Europe. Hey, hold on a second. I've got to do a break here, Mary. I'll come right back and we'll finish this up on the other side of the break. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Don't go away.
Anthony Hopkins. Damn.
feels bad when you can't think of it, right?
Feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, back to Mary in Mississippi. Okay, Mary, where were we?
Well, we were talking about that base in Paraguay, and I brought it up because you mentioned that how our own forces are under-equipped and under-trained and thinning. And apparently that land that he bought has a huge army base capable of housing, you know, like a whole, what do you call it? Is it a battalion that's like 20,000?
Regiment?
It can handle transport planes, those B-52s, or I don't even know, but those huge transport planes.
It's an American base?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's on the internet, so you know it's true, right? But
Well, you know, I've seen the story over and over and over again. I haven't heard it yet on mainstream media, which doesn't mean anything. And I wonder if it's true. I have no reason to doubt it's the truthfulness of it. I think Bush completely understands, or somebody has told him, that what he has done as president will not get him impeached by these cowardly Democrats, but it could set him up for arrest by an international war crimes tribunal. So why not be in a country where one is relatively beyond the reach of that sort of thing? You
exactly, because they don't have that's what they did. Paraguay apparently passed an ordinance saying that all criminals, war otherwise criminals, were exempt from prosecution in Paraguay. And plus, guess who negotiated this?
Henry Kissinger?
No.
Who?
The rumor is Bush's daughter.
Oh, they couldn't negotiate their way out of a wet bra contest.
Well, they were down there.
Or a wet T-shirt contest. Well, I know they were down there, but they were drinking and carousing and getting robbed and their purses stolen and flashing their boobies.
Well,
and,
apparently that was the cover, but apparently there's been a lot. Well, anyway, I'm just going to listen to your show, and maybe there'll be some comments from it, you know?
Yeah, I'll take a look. I've got to check that story out. I really do. All right, well, thanks, Mary.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for checking in. Credits on the program. Thanks to the crew. Once again, Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your calls in Phoenix. Thanks, Ian. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Thanks, Chris. Mark Marshall, our webmaster, and the militant moderators at MikeMalloy.com. Thanks, guys. And if you haven't gone there, have we hit the 2 million visitor mark yet, Kathy? There's a counter at the bottom of the main page. I haven't checked it lately. But go there and register and participate in the discussion there if you are so inclined. It's just you can't use a Hotmail or a Yahoo or a Qmail account. It's got to be your ISP server mail account, but we'd love to see you there. Ben Birch, White Rose Society archives the program, and iPod downloads and stuff are available on this program. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. Back to Ricky, who is calling from Michigan. Hey, Ricky.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great now that you're back on serious. Thank God for that.
I'll agree with that.
You know, when you were on XM, I kept both of my both satellite subscriptions going just so that I could hear you on XM radio. And of course, then you disappeared off of XM.
Yeah.
But I meant to tell you this before. I never could get through, but I got to tell you this real quick.
Okay.
I'm a Vietnam veteran. A lot of my friends are Vietnam veterans. And the first time that I heard your show, I called all my friends up and I said, "Oh, you got to listen to this guy. Here's a guy finally who has a national audience, who's found a way to give a voice to the frustration and the rage that we feel, those of us who left blood and body parts in Vietnam, who watched our friends die in Vietnam, and now we're watching these evil, rotten bastards who have stolen our government send our children to die in another pointless war."
It's horrifying. It's horrifying.
Thank you for that. Real quick, I want to make my friends spew their beer all over each other by saying this. I am going to support Hillary for president, and it's strictly for selfish reasons. It's because I want to see Pat Robertson and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all of those lying gas bags die a slow and agonizing death by their guts being eaten out from their own bile and hatred, having to live with a President Hillary.
I love it. I love it. Thanks, Ricky.
All right.
All right.
Good,
take
Mike.
Care, man. Check in again, all right?
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
We got time for one more call, Kathy. All right. Steve is calling from Los Angeles. Steve, welcome to the program. Steve?
Yeah, are you there?
I can't hear you. Get me off speaker.
Hello? Oh, okay. Are you there?
There you go.
Sorry, man.
That's all right.
Yes, Keanu was Jonathan Harker, my friend.
That's right.
And Tom Waits was Renfro, who eats maggots. Yes!
That's
maggot! Eat the maggot!
That was the greatest movie of all time. That's up there in my top five.
Hell yeah, man. But anyway, I want to be the first person to give you a Baba Booey. I'm serious, brother Heifer! Yeah!
Oh, okay, Steve.
I told you. You'd be here, man.
Yes, you did.
I told you for months and months you'd be here. But anyway, my first thing is, yes, I'm an atheist. And secondly, when do you think, and this is a little more serious, no pun, the Saigon moment will come?
I don't know that there's going to be a Saigon moment. The people being lifted off the roof of... the American embassy, and I'll tell you why. I think while we had collaborators in Vietnam, we had people in the so-called South Vietnamese government that depended on American protection for whatever kind of enterprise they were involved in. We don't have that in Iraq. And there is no American embassy there. But a Saigon moment, I don't think is going to happen because everybody in Iraq hates us. Everybody, top to bottom, because they understand the way we Americans will never understand what we've done to their country. Hey, I got to leave it there, Steve. We're out of time, but I hope to hear from you again. Thanks for all your emails, pal. Keep them coming. All right. Well, that's it for tonight from us. Thanks a lot for participating. However you did that, I appreciate it. Thanks to our new affiliates for joining up with Nova M and Sirius. We appreciate it, guys. Thank you very, 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 very much. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.